There is the 1 month in their lives when Hannah and Kip sleep beside each other, a formal celibacy between them, discovering that in lovemaking there can be a whole civilization. All evening, his thin face against her ribs, she reminded him of the pleasure of being scratched, her fingernails in circles raking his back. It was something an ayah had taught him years earlier. All comfort and peace during childhood, Kip remembered, had come from her, never from the mother he loved or from his brother or father whom he played with. When he was scared or unable to sleep, it was the ayah who recognized his lack, who would ease him into sleep with her hand on his small, thin back. This intimate stranger from South India, who lived with them, helped run a household, cooked and served them meals, brought up her own children within the shell of the household, having comforted his older brother too in earlier years, probably knowing the character of all of the children better than their real parents did. It was a mutual affection. If Kip had been asked whom he loved most, he would have named his ayah before his mother. All through his life, he would realize later, he was drawn outside the family to find such love. The platonic intimacy, or at times, the sexual intimacy of a stranger. Only once did he feel he had given her back any comfort, although she already understood his love for her. When her mother died, he had crept into her room and held her suddenly old body. In silence, he lay beside her mourning in her small servant's room, where she wept wildly and formally. He watched as she collected her tears in a small glass cup held against her face. She would take this, he knew, to the funeral. He was behind her hunched-over body, his 9-year-old hands on her shoulders, and when she was finally still, just now and then a shudder, he began to scratch her through the sari, then pulled it aside and scratched her skin, as Hannah now received this tender art, his nails against the million cells of her skin in his tent in 1945, where their continents met in a hill town. The English patient holds out his arm, the bruised veins horizontal, facing up for the raft of morphine. As it floods him, he hears Caravaggio drop the needle into the kidney-shaped enamel tin. He sees the grizzled form turn its back to him and then reappear, also caught, a citizen of Morphia with him. He begins speaking again. I promised to tell you how one falls in love. A young man named Geoffrey Clifton had met a friend at Oxford who had mentioned what we were doing. He contacted me, got married the next day, and 2 weeks later flew with his wife to Cairo. They were on the last days of their honeymoon. That was the beginning of our story. When I met Catherine, she was married. A married woman. Clifton climbed out of the plane and then, unexpected, for we had planned the expedition with just him in mind, she emerged. Khaki shorts, bony knees. In those days she was too ardent for the desert. I like his youth more than the eagerness of his new young wife. He was our pilot, messenger, reconnaissance. He was the new age, flying over and dropping codes of long coloured ribbon to advise us where we should be. He shared his adoration of her constantly. Here were 4 men and 1 woman, and her husband in his verbal joy of honeymoon. They went back to Cairo and returned a month later, and it was almost the same. She was quieter this time, but he was still the youth. She would squat on some petrol cans, her jaw cupped in her hands, her elbows on her knees, staring at some constantly flapping tarpaulin, and Clifton would be singing her praises. We tried to joke him out of it, but to wish him more modest would have been against him, and none of us wanted that.